week, on Myths and Legends, there are two stories from Celtic folklore, where we learn true friends don't steal each other's berries. Because once you do, all bets are off and you leave yourself open to murder. The creature this week is a fun dwarf, who will help you learn a foreign language, so you know which days they will not come after you. This is Myths and Legends, episode 359. A very good day for murder? This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular stories you might think you know, but with surprising origins, and others are tales that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. Today, there are two stories from Celtic folklore, likely Ireland, but the collector isn't super specific. Just like they aren't specific about what type of creatures the two characters at the top of the episode are. We do know one thing, though. Manachar and Munachar love their berries. Munachar narrowed his eyes. Where were all his berries? Manachar smiled and put a finger to his lips. He'll never tell. Manachar, seriously, it's not funny, it's not cute. I hate this. You always do this. We go out raspberry picking and you eat all the raspberries that we both pick. Seriously, Manachar. Munachar crossed his arms. Manachar shrugged. He had no idea what Munachar meant. He hadn't even had any berries. That was a hefty accusation to throw. Munachar might have pointed out that both of their baskets were empty after they had been picking all morning. That there was a trail of berry bits and stains leading directly from his basket up to Manachar's tunic and to his mouth. Or that Manachar was actively eating a berry at this moment. But he didn't. No. Because Munachar had a solution that would render all future berry-related issues moot. He was going to kill Manachar. Then he would be able to eat all the berries. Always. Munachar? Manachar shouted after the person stomped off, leaving him surrounded by unpicked raspberry bushes. He smirked. More berries for him. He began shoveling them all into his mouth. What news do you have of the day? The talking stick asked Munachar. I'm going to make the news, Munachar said, by killing Manachar, and I need you to help me do it. He was going to make a gad to loop a rope around Manachar's neck and hang him. Why do you want to hang Manachar? The stick on the tree asked. Munachar zeroed in on whatever the stick's eyes were. He didn't actually know how to talk to this thing. The reason? Manachar ate his raspberries. Every last one of them. The stick gasped, despite not having lungs. It said that, seeing as it was a stick and didn't possess a mouth, taste buds, a digestive tract, or really any experience eating anything, it just had to imagine the capital offense that was berry theft. Okay, it imagined it, and it was on board with helping Munachar dispense medieval frontier justice against this monster. But, well, they needed an axe. Munachar said, axe? Why did they need an axe? He wrapped two hands around the rod and pulled at the tree and yeah, okay, he would go get an axe. Stay put. I literally can't go anywhere. That's why we need the axe, the rod called out. So I'm looking to kill a guy, Munachar started when he found the axe. Yes, the axe cut in. Huh. You don't even want to hear my justification? He ate my raspberries, Munachar tried to explain. What type of justification do I need? I'm an axe. I cut stuff. Wood, people, other axes maybe. I don't know. I've never done that before, but I'm down to try, the axe said. Okay, well, I think there's been a teensy bit of a misunderstanding. I'm not looking to attack him with you. I just need to cut the rod so I can hang him. Oh, well, that changes things. Is what I would say if that changed anything, which it doesn't. I was down to cut a human or whatever it is you are, I don't make the distinction between humans and animals and inanimate objects. I just see things I can chop and things I can't. Buddy, I am down to cut anything, so let's get chopping. The axe smiled. Munachar smiled back. Nice, all right. But I can't chop anything, the axe added. But you just said, I know what I said. I tried to chop that boulder over there. It didn't go well. So I'm dull now. I need a whetstone, axe sighed. You get me that whetstone, sharpen me up, and I'll chop whatever you want me to chop. And some things you don't want me to chop. That sounded vaguely threatening, Munachar noted. What can I say? One wrong move with me and I'll get ya, the axe laughed. Just kidding, or not. Wait and see. Munachar went to find a whetstone. So, hi, Flagstone? Munachar said to the Flatstone. Flagstone said, what's up? Munachar said he was wondering if he could take the Flagstone to go sharpen the axe. He needed the axe to cut the rod to... Oh, gonna stop you right there. Don't need to know. The whetstone didn't raise a hand because it was a stone and didn't have hands. It said that way when asked. He didn't do nothing. He just sharpened an axe, which is what he does when he's not involved in building. Munachar said he thought he understood. Yeah, so, but I can't, the flagstone said. Not for moral reasons, but practical ones. I can't sharpen without water. Why do you think they call us whetstones? Whetstone is spelled W-H-E-T, stone. W-H-E-T, wet, is a verb meaning sharpen. It comes from the Old English whetten, and relates to wetzen in German, meaning sharp, Munachar corrected. Oh, look at you with your words, Professor Word-haver. How about we rub an axe on your dry face and see how that feels, the flagstone said. Munachar held up his hands. No worries. He would bring the water. The water that the stone needed to be wet because he needed to be a whetstone. Yeah, that's what I thought, the whetstone called after Munachar. Word is you're looking for some water to kill a guy who eats your raspberries, the river called out. Munachar said it was a little more complicated than that, but essentially yes. Can't say I agree with premeditated murder, the water said in probably the least spicy take ever. But the water did acknowledge that if Munachar didn't get the water from him, he would get it from somewhere else. So he was willing to work with a human-like creature. What even are you? So there's a deer that comes by and drinks from me sometimes, the water said. Oh, okay, weird, Munachar observed. Oh, you bet it's weird. I want it to swim in me, the water bubbled. What? Yeah, its sharp hooves and its deer lice washing off all its forest stink in me, the water laughed. Munachar said that there were a lot of really specific and troubling... Oh! I didn't think the guy who wanted to kill someone for eating his berries would be so judgy. What, you kill your sense of irony first? I don't think that's irony, Munachar noted, but okay. He would convince the deer to swim around in the river. Ah, river! I remember river. Yeah, I'm down, the deer smirked. Munachar clapped. Excellent. Fantastic. Little weird, but okay. He could still get back while there were still berries in the field. Why wasn't the deer moving? What? You think I'm just going to go swimming for free? The deer asked. Munachar sighed. Okay. What did the deer want? So, the deer wants to be hunted, Munachar said to the hound. What? Why? The hound pricked up his ears by the house. Honestly, no idea, Munachar said. The deer rambled on about not feeling truly alive unless he was running for his life, mere inches from death. It didn't seem super healthy. Yeah, it's not healthy because I'm going to eat that deer, the hound said. The hound was down, but the thing was, he was worried that he wouldn't be able to catch the deer, and then he'd be out all that energy with nothing to show for it. So... You want something in return, Munachar groaned. Yeah, sure. What was it? It was butter. He wanted a pad of butter for his paw. The butter, of course, needed a cat to scratch it, because why not? At this point, Munachar had learned that he shouldn't ask questions he didn't want to think about the answers to. The cat, for her part, wanted some milk. I'd like to say that Munachar stopped explaining the whole chain of events, but I guess he wanted everyone to know how responsible they would be for a murder, even if that amount of responsibility was dwindling. I mean, am I responsible if someone drinks my milk and then goes out and stabs someone directly? The cow asked. Munachar said he guessed not. The answer is no, the cow retorted. So why would he be responsible if someone used his milk to feed a cat, to scrape some butter, to placate a dog, to chase a deer, to swim in a river, to wet a stone, to sharpen an axe, to cut a rod, to hang a guy? I guess you wouldn't be. So can I get some milk? Can this one please be easy? Munachar thought about the field of berries disappearing as he did all of this. Yeah, of course, the cow said, if the threshers over there want to give me some hay. Munachar sighed. He would go ask. I feel like hay should be a pretty easy ask, but we'll see, there's some complications with that too. That, however, will be right after this. The human threshers understood the ethical implications of what Munachar was asking. For the weight of the murder of a berry thief on their souls, they needed something more than butter or wheat or milk. They needed all of those together. In a cake. I can't bake you a cake, Munachar whined. Come on. They said they didn't want his cake. The miller over there had one he just iced. Bring them that, and he could get some hay. The miller, for his part, said just a flat no. What? Why not? The miller pointed out the window. Those threshers had been yelling at him all day. Hey, we want some of your cake. Give us your cake, nerd. We're going to get that cake. There must be something you want, Munachar pleaded. The miller looked to his supplies. He grabbed a sieve. Yeah, you know what? If Munachar fills this sieve with water, he could have a cake. There's a stream down there, in view of the miller's back window, and it was pretty docile, and wouldn't spring any weird requests on Munachar for the water. Munachar took the sieve and ran outside. Easy enough. He lowered the sieve into the water, brought it out, and the water, of course, ran through it, because it was a sieve. Laughter erupted from the miller's back window. Oh, well, it looks like you're not getting that cake, the miller said, then laughed harder. Oh, man, Munachar wasn't giving up either. This was hilarious. He was not going to be able to do it. Munachar had come so far with a simple goal of killing the guy who ate his berries. And he couldn't believe he would be stopped here. This was the last piece of the puzzle. This was the linchpin, the cornerstone. This was what would make everything else fall into place. And too many metaphors. Oh, my gosh. Pick a lane. The miller laughed from the window. Then a shadow passed overhead. Munachar looked up and saw a crow. It cried out, "Dob, dob!" as it passed. Munachar thought that that was weird, that literally everything else could talk, but a crow couldn't. I said dab. Dab, dab, dab the sieve, the crow said, landing and strutting in the mud by the river. Why? Munachar asked. The crow said, put some mud in the sieve and see. Mud dripped from Munachar's fingers. And the man, or the creature, or gnome, honestly the story plays coy with what exactly Munachar and Manachar are, saw that the crow was right. The mud stopped up the sieve. He could fill it with water. It did briefly cross his mind, as he ran back to the sweary miller, that he could skip about 10 steps and take the water directly to the whetstone to sharpen the axe, but that would be legitimately unsatisfying. He had come all this way, he would see it through. After some threats directed at the miller, I mean, Munachar was doing this to murder someone, Munachar got the cake and gave it to the threshers, who were happy to part with some straw for the cow, who gave milk for the cat. The cat scraped the butter for the hound, who chased Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted deer within an inch of his life. The deer, happy that he could feel something for once, took a swim to cool off in the river. Munachar took a cup of water to the flagstone and took them both to the axe, where, newly sharpened, the axe was happy to cut a rod from the tree, and also try to slice Munachar in several convenient mishaps. Munachar used the rod to craft a gad. Then he just sat there, looking at the sky. He had gone through a lot today, talking to animals of all sorts, people, each one seemingly weighing their own responsibility in what Munachar said he would do. But it wouldn't be on any one of them because, at the end of it, it would be Munachar's choice. It would weigh on his soul. His choice to kill his friend over what? Berries? Yes, that is something I will do. I will do exactly that for that reason, Munachar said to himself, rising, gad in hand. This wasn't him wavering. This was him reflecting on just how much he wanted to kill Manachar, because Manachar committed the most heinous, truly unforgivable crime of berry theft. And for that, he must die. Munachar found his way back to the field. Field that was now bald and barren. Every last berry was gone. And there, in its center, was Manachar, huddled, hand over his mouth to keep himself from retching. He stood and Manachar saw, in his other hand, the berry. The last berry in the field. Manachar! Munachar screamed and pointed the gad. Manachar raised the berry to his mouth. Don't you dare eat that berry! Munachar began to run toward his former friend and future victim. Manachar smirked and dropped the berry into his mouth. After a few quick chews, he swallowed. Then, his smile disappeared. Not because his friend ran toward him, weapon out, but because of a rumble. You see, that last little bit, though it was only the smallest, wafer-thin berry, it was too much. Manachar popped. And Munachar got his berries, if not his revenge. I do appreciate how unrepentant Munachar was. He didn't have a change of heart. He just wanted his vengeance. No moralizing, no lessons, just a ridiculous story about all the things everyone will do to contribute to a crime, and how, thankfully, at the end, he did not do it. Next up, a young man is going to leave home, but not without his blessings. Blessings, 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 blessings. Jack's mother was blessing him. You see, Jack had asked his mother for his inheritance, which, when the assets and liabilities were zeroed out, came to a chicken and a piece of cake. Which in today's world of mortgages and student loans and interest rates and all that, actually doesn't sound like a bad balance sheet. It apparently was a big ask, though, and his mother met him at the fence the morning of his departure with a deal. All of his inheritance with a curse, or half of it with a blessing. Jack didn't even need to think about it. Of course he wouldn't leave with a curse from his mother. Jack chose half the cake and the chicken, but he didn't get it. It was a test. His mother gave him both the cake and the chicken, and 1,000 blessings, which, if you're in the market for blessings, feels like too many blessings. It's like internet speeds. Do you really need a gigabit, or can you get by with 500 megabits or even 250? Well, Jack needed all the blessings he could get, and maybe a few more, because when he approached the farms asking if they needed a hand so he could make a little bit of money, no one was hiring strange children with a cake under their arm and a chicken on a leash. It could be worse, though. He could be drowning in a swamp, like Ned the donkey, who was, yes, drowning in a swamp right in front of him. Hey, kid, the donkey said, help me out here or I'll drown eventually. Jack, as was established by his rejection of carrying around half a chicken corpse at the top of the story, was a good kid. The donkey didn't even need to ask twice. He didn't even need to ask once, but he already did that, so whatever. Jack staked his chicken leash in the ground, put the cake out of range of said chicken, and found some rocks. About an hour later, the donkey struggled from the muck, showering Jack with nearly as many thanks as he had blessings, vowing to do the same for him someday. Jack said he could use every friend he could find. He was going to seek his fortune, and the donkey offered to come along. Together, they made it to a village where Jack looked at the donkey. Is this something that other kids did? He and the donkey looked at the gaggle of gossoons, chasing the dog with the bell on its tail. Gossoon is, apparently, an Irish adaptation of the French word garçon, meaning boys. This really serves no other purpose than a slight etymological curiosity, and to show that I'm still chipping away at learning French. Also, I've joked about how the Middle Ages must have been a slow time entertainment-wise, but I think this is probably the pinnacle. Hey kids, let's put a bell on that dog's tail and beat him if we catch him. That being said, as opposed to playing Roblox or something, here you have fresh air, exercise, stark moral conundrums. Anyway, Jack, too, thought it was too much and stepped in. All the gossoons were smaller than him. And when he had the donkey hee-hawing by his side, it was easy to make the kids break and scatter. The dog, named Coley, thanked Jack and, like the donkey, offered to accompany him on his journey. So I may have misread the chicken situation because Jack, unaccountably, has meat for a meal when he and his two companions stopped to rest. Either his mom gave him cooked chicken or, well, he slaughtered one of his less talkative traveling companions. Once again, it's a time when an entire village full of garçons play catch and beat the dog, so really either of those work. You don't have to slink around out there, Jack said as he nibbled some meat off the chicken bone. The cat had poked around a rock. We have plenty, and you look like you don't eat much. Jack tossed him some meat, and the group was four. We'll see the group meet way more, but that will, once again, be right after this. That night, Tom the cat was curled up next to Coley, the dog, and both were in Nettie, the donkey's lap. Jack looked at his three friends, and as he began to close his eyes, he smiled at his weird, ridiculous life. Then the screams. Oh, cluck no! Help! Please, someone! Everyone in the group was awake before they saw Renard, the fox, saunter by with a black rooster in his jaws. Renard took one look at the group, said a muffled, "What is this, a crossover episode?" before bolting into the woods. Coley, the dog, took off after Renard. Not 10 minutes later, he returned, the dazed rooster by his side, the bird thanking the dog for scaring off Renard and saving his life. He looked at the unlikely group and said he would join them and aid them in their time of need, and not just because he was a prey animal. Jack said, "Okay, sure." The rooster fluttered up to a tree, and they all fell asleep. For about 3 hours. "Cock-a-doodle-doo, wake up, I see the sun," the rooster crowed from the branch high in the tree. Jack rose, neck sore. It was still the middle of the night. Where did the rooster see the sun? It's a little one, like so tiny, it's over there. The rooster pointed a wing, and Jack squinted. That's a candle burning in a house. Big ball of fire, little ball of fire, what's the difference? The rooster dismissed Jack's criticism. Like so many orders of magnitude, it's not even worth going into here, Jack said. This is why roosters had so many false positives and basically crowed at all times of the day or night. Still, Jack shivered. It was his first time sleeping out of doors, and even though he had his traveling companions, he still missed the little things, the little comforts, like a roof and walls. Jack looked. All right, the light was coming from far off, down in the hollow. It would be a bit of a walk, but people out here would likely be hospitable to travelers at night. He tapped Coley, Nettie, and Tom, saying they were going to make for the house down below. When they finally arrived, the person and the four animals looking through the windows saw a lot of guns. Pistols and blunderbusses, to be precise, and a lot of beer, wine, and whiskey punch. Jack also learned a lot of fun new swears. The people inside laughed. The Lord of Dunlaven had so much he wouldn't even miss this. Maybe if the Lord had been more generous with his gold, this wouldn't have happened. The porter had been an easy one to bribe. Criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot, is something 1940s Batman says, but is probably not true. It might have been what Jack believed, but what he knew was that he had a chance. There was a pile of treasure in the corner. Making them pay for their crimes was the right thing to do. Getting paid to make them pay for their crimes was slightly more morally gray, but still maybe on the right track. Like Batman, Jack had a plan. He told the animals that now was the time to make good on their promise. All right, listen to him and stack up. The animals looked at each other. Stack up? Was that something they should understand? Jack whisper yelled, rooster on cat, cat on dog, dog on donkey, let's move. Neddy the donkey tottered up with a Jenga tower of animals on his back, and the stack found themselves facing the window. Jack held up three fingers. Okay, like they talked about. He counted down and pointed, and the sound exploded out of the animals, taking the pain with it. And the brigands inside scattered like the glass on the floor. The beastly silhouette framed by the window, the thieves knew it was something otherworldly coming for them, and they rushed off into the night. Maybe Jack didn't know if you could give a donkey wine or a dog whiskey punch, but figured they were sentient creatures and probably knew their limits. A roof over them and the blankets and walls blocking the wind, the four animals and one human person fell asleep. That's how the man pushed his way past the table propped up over the window and slipped inside. The thieves made it about a quarter mile before they finally calmed down. Seeing as they had been using the forest as a hideout for years, they knew their way around and knew there wasn't any place else to sleep that night other than the damp moss of the ground. So they sent a scout to learn exactly who chased them from their hideout. They were divided regarding who or what had taken up residence there. Two votes witch, two for giant, one conscientious objector, and one swing vote for boy with talking animals that both sides seemed to hate. So the scout found the cabin, dark in the night. It was completely dark inside, but he knew his way to the gold pile. Unfortunately, there had never been a cat in the way before. Our cats would just run away if you stepped on them. This one lived in the forest with Renard slinking around, so it didn't mince words. It did, however, mince faces. Tom clawed at the shrieking thief until he stumbled backward into Coley, the dog, who sunk his dog teeth into the thief's thigh. Try saying that five times fast. The rooster, despite not having seen a son of any size, woke up next and found the thief in complete darkness, despite the fact that they actually have worse night vision than humans. The rooster flapped and pecked and went for the eyes with his spurs as the thief barreled through the wood of the door. Stumbling into the forest at night, he felt Ned kick him in the stomach. Clawing at the ground and desperately sucking through his teeth for air, the thief struggled to find his feet and broke into a run. When he found his friends, blood streaming down his face and hands holding a broken rib or two, he said it was so much worse than they thought. The monster they had seen was just the vanguard. The witch was by the gold pile, slashing at the thief's face when she realized he was there. Her husband, an old ogre, tore at his thigh with his ogre claws. A demon perched over the door, and the thief could hear black wings beating the darkness as his talons raked the thief's skull. Finally, the giant outside pounded him in the ribs with a sledgehammer. He figured maybe if they banded together and got the jump on the monsters, they could take back their hideout and their gold and... Guys? Where'd they go? I don't see why we couldn't just stay in that cabin forever, Coley, the dog, said. The group walked alongside Ned, who had bags of gold jostling at his side. Jack told him it was because he made a promise. Yeah, some versions of the story end that way, the rooster said. And then the other four looked at him. He said he meant, gobble gobble. Chickens don't gobble, the cat said. Jack agreed. Yeah, wait, were they in a story? You'll be in a true crime story if you don't turn back, the group heard up ahead. A young man stood before the door to a castle, the Lord of Dunlavin's castle. I mean, we kind of already are, Jack said, and then looked. Hey, was he the porter? The porter said Jack had 10 seconds to turn around before he released the hounds on Jack and the animals, because this was a time where they could do stuff like that with impunity.
10, 9, 8.
Oh, I just thought the Lord of Dunlavin might want to know who robbed his castle. Jack shrugged.
4, 3, 2, 1.
I do. I really do. They heard from the window above. Don't release the hounds, though it is within our legal rights in this time period to do so, the king said, and began hustling down the stairs. Sire, he knows nothing, the porter argued. I know who let the thieves in, Jack grinned. No one knows who let those 6 thieves in the castle, the porter crossed his arms, and then noticed everyone looking at him. What? His eyes widened. Oh, wait, he said 6, didn't he? He was just gonna, run away very fast. And he did. Forever. Jack said that even though he thought it of dubious moral legitimacy for someone to have the right to take money by force from those less well-off than himself to add to his already prodigious wealth based solely on who his parents were, Jack was actually hoping to buy into that system himself with goodwill and luck. He uncinched the bags and returned the gold to the Lord of Dunlavin. The Lord was so entertained by Jack's story, impressed by his intelligence, and inspired by his courage and initiative, that he could think of no better man to be his son-in-law. Jack married the Lord's daughter. But even with all that, there was one thing left to do. The promise he had been keeping this whole time.
Blessings, 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 blessings.
Jack ran to embrace his mother. It worked. He found his fortune, and after all she had done for him, he would now be able to take care of her. And yes, they had cake. This text is, of course, a different version of the Bremen Town Musicians, a much more famous Grimm fairy tale that we've told in the membership feed. As was referenced, that version does end with them living it up in the cabin after scaring away the bandits. I like how this one came full circle, ending with the mother. Next week, we will remain in Celtic folklore and Irish folklore, because as sort of a special St. Patrick's Day thing, we have the first story ever, apparently, to feature leprechauns. And you'll see that if you wake up to leprechauns trying to drag you into the lake and drown you, congrats, you just got some wishes. The creature this week is the Nong from Brittany. Now, quick history lesson, Brittany is referred to as Little Britain as opposed to Great Britain. This seems odd because Brittany is actually in France, but alongside Wales, Cornwall, Ireland, the Isle of Man, Scotland, and elsewhere, it is historically one of the places the Celts migrated, or fled, from the Romans and later the Anglo-Saxons. Most, if not all, these places have their own languages. All this to say, if you're thinking about walking around the Breton countryside at night, you might want to pick up some Breton. At least know the days of the week. That will help you to know when you will not die. Probably. The Nong oscillates wildly from a portly bearded gentleman, who looks like he knows some solid home brewing recipes and has some strong opinions on which edition of D&D to use, to an actual gargoyle with rocky, coal-like skin, glowing red eyes, claws, and more. In addition to their knightly endeavors, which we'll get to shortly, they enjoy counterfeiting. Fairy gold is gold given to you by a fairy that turns to, like, leaves or beans or something when you get home. That you would trade for this makes sense if it's the fun little bearded guy. Not so much if it's a gargoyle. If you want to get real gold from them, it's said that they're the ones that carved into ancient stoneworks their secret for where they keep the gold. So if that seems like a good idea, definitely go for it. They can be found dancing around Celtic dolmens at midnight, speaking in Breton, warning people which days of the week you shouldn't even mention, because the Na hold them so sacred. So, you see fun, portly gnomes dancing it out. Tempting, I know, but avoid them. You see gargoyles dancing it out. I shouldn't even need to tell you, but do not engage. If you do dance with either of them, then it's over for you. Eventually. Yes, anyone who takes them up on their offer of a midnight dance will die. Sometime in the next year or so. Could be supernatural, like a curse or something. Could be that the person choosing to dance at midnight with gargoyles is not making the safest life choices. Regardless, just don't. That's it for this week. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free, and the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to even more of the music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.